Now the mind thinks that it's late of yesterday. But today is not today. We want to welcome CRL. We should have fun in this meeting. Of course, it's the second statement that we have with the first. And also this year. We want to make partnership, of course, but I must tell you that these are actually the partners who are blind. That you know that the bank on them. You don't have to look over your shoulder when you work with the highly committed practice. I thought that you were going to interview during the slaughtering of a school by Tony. Because your task is to protect languages and countries and to ensure that there's a coexistence of communities. That's what I know about that. Now, meaning therefore that even that issue of the other people feeling that it's in their rights and not to allow culture to practice in the country in terms of kin, I thought that you're going to come and say no, we are the custodian of the issue. Therefore, the basis of that, this is the correct thing that has been done. Because I'm telling you that shows how diverse our country is, and how intolerant some people are on other people's cultures, beliefs, we hope that there's a lot really that you still have to, a long road that you still have to come and travel, as much as educating people about the way other things. But critically, I think your first line are STD. First line, STD. So that they are going to appreciate the fact that even the Bible says, sacrifice an animal. And I think we remember Solomon in the mountain. Therefore, it's not something new in this era of ours that has been set up. With those ways, I would like to introduce the team so that you keep it in mind. On the extreme right was Mr. Fielding, who is a member of the committee. He is coming from the Northern Cape, where he comes from the biggest problem in geographically, but the smallest in terms of population. Mr. Hilton, he's a convert. He has been converted yesterday. Now, you see that when you look at it, you see a traditional leader. Now, next to him, we have Mr. Wells. Mr. Wells is the gentleman from the Free State, the honorable from the Free State. But now they're very quiet. I don't know what they're doing.
Very quiet.
next to him was a poor man. A gentleman is from the Eastern Cape. He is coming from Poland. I don't hear him advocating the language. He tells me that he's a chief. He tells me that he's a chief. I'll tell you that he is. But because I'm still doing research about the imposed chief by the regime, I gave him a session of his work. Bob Manuel. Next is Bob Manuel from Ukoshingwe. Where is the real chief? That was a concern. Last year he was finishing 25 years as a chief. You can see that he entered in this terrain still very young. 25 years as a chief, last year. He had a very big ceremony. That was very old. Therefore, that's what I can confirm. The research is concluded on that one. Next to him, we have Noveloma Mack. She's coming from Limpopo. But now he has been contracted to Kamala. Kamala is Limpopo. Due to these changes of boundaries and so on. Next to him was Mr. Noveloma Mack. He's from Clifford West, what we used to call Southern Cape. Then, he's part of the Cape Town. Very passionate about Clifford West. And I must tell you now, before you leave, there's an issue around Clifford West. Next to him were the Ulrich, Mr. Wellenberg. Yesterday we were told by Ingozi, he has the Northwest, Ingozi Ushuti. He says that Mr. Mbeki is among the senior houses, the Temple Village, of Bana. He belongs to the senior. Therefore, when he's around, you don't eat before he eats. You must be commanded by him first. That's my little practice. He makes everything happen. Coordinates something. It's the backbone of the community, both of us, and the administration. I think you know the gentleman from the TPC. Because those gentlemen, the two of them, they assist in terms of money, in terms of the training and all that. You know our compliment. There was a very beautiful lady, the only lady that is not coming from the ethnic and from the PNG, from the parliamentary conference, that's a team that you have, a team you know over here.
Thank you, Chair. As always, we are honored to be here and definitely regard it as a singular privilege to be able to not only interact and share with you our story, but also to be able to benefit from the collective wisdom of the Commission. And I'm sure your insights from Pondoland to Beaufort West will definitely give us a Vodacom train, a blanket coverage. And so it's always good because it allows us an opportunity to bounce ideas, issues, concerns, uncertainties, and so on. Before I go on, let me introduce our team. On my right is the CEO, Mrs. Emma Diba, and on her right is our CFO, Connie Smart. She tells me that this term is a relative of young man. as a way of introduction, in fact, Chair, you'll be happy to know that we actually had a meeting with the FPCA, a very formal meeting, and actually raised the issue. And really, in fact, our point, what I think what you were suggesting, what you say, our point was not on their right to say whatever they have to say in terms of freedom of speech. We were more concerned about the debilitating effect that would have on an average person in Carnarvon or in Bochum or somewhere out in Kaufing, where all they know is that if there's a knife and there's a beast close by, the police are coming to take you. And you know the way people talk, you know, that you are not gaining. Before anybody knows that they are arrested, they would have thrown away the key. And so we're saying that, in effect, actually infringes on the people's right to their cultural practices. And I must say they did admit that, in fact, they went overboard and they were rather over-enthusiastic in responding to the Yengini matter. And we talked about it. And also, subsequent to that, I every day from that time, in fact, I receive about four emails from anywhere from Singapore to Brazil, talking about that, you know, checking us for the position we took on this matter. And then you realize that, in fact, there was an invisible animal lobby that is out there to stand up for animals and so on. But the issue being that one realized that there was a concerted campaign, and then this campaign was then directed to us. You could pick up the tone and the language of the letters that it comes from, one form letter. But the interesting thing about that, though, is that it actually, for us, as you also indicated, it shows in very sharp relief the extent of the challenges that we have as a commission as we seek to translate our mandate into livable freedom on the part of people. In other words, how do we begin to talk about the need for cultural diversity and the need to appreciate one's culture without pushing people into the memory of ethnic identities that we've associated with our past? And how within that, we also encourage one another to begin, in fact, to realize that the notion of culture is not like a jacket. It doesn't mean if one person has it, you cannot have it. But it is more like a blanket in which there lies within our human experience the possibility to share cultural insights across the board. In other words, culture is not necessarily sort of a closed-in thing that doesn't go across to other people. And so within that, then the core function of WhatsApp is to then to seek ways in which we can begin to make ourselves as a nation, firstly to appreciate that we are different, but at the same time to move beyond that appreciation, because we are a united nation that seeks to support one another. So that even issues like naming, geographical names and so on and so on, begin to illustrate this tendency to want to go back into the trenches of the past. And we as you will hear from the CEO, how do we begin to talk to those things? And then there are other, I think, national and important issues, things like we are beginning to talk about repatriation of people. How do we do that appropriately? What are some of the challenges faced with that kind of activity? Issues of people whose parents lived in farms. What is our notion of space? Is it as it's contained in our constitution that talks about private property? Do the children of people who are buried in farms have a right to go back to those farms in order to do cultural rituals that are associated with the dead? And in a way that is not threatening to the farmer, but at the same time it is affirming to the livelihood of the children of those people. Those are some of the sort of broad issues that we will be dealing with. And the challenge we found is, again, the issues of definitions and context and all of that, because also linked to that same discussion is we have a mandate to define communities, and as you will know, even sociologists and anthropologists have not succeeded in doing that. But our act somehow expects that we should be able, for functional purposes, to define what constitutes a community. And so we are also struggling with those sort of broad major issues. And of course there are smaller ones which you will pick up as the CEO will give the detail. But I'm simply saying that the mandate of the Commission at one level is to give content to what we mean by Ubuntu, what we mean by community, and what we mean by unity and diversity, and how we then utilize that diversity that we have in the agenda of the nation building. Let me give to the CEO, who can count better than I can, and to make a presentation.
Thank you, Chair. I think it is important that we touch exactly on this note that has been sent first by the chairperson of the Commission. Without going into the preliminaries of saying the mandate, the mission, the vision, and assuming that everyone still remembers and they have the mission. So that one runs quickly to what we are asked to come and present here at the moment. However, let me explain that we have put our presentation in that way because we believe we are all expected to first have a plan before we say how much plan that it is. The costing of. I'm saying something at this note of dealing with the challenges is a very important one. The challenges that we have, that means indirectly one deals with the environment within which we have to operate. The first challenge is that given our history, we have to look at diminishing heritage and diminishing human and African values of the world. and how we can best contribute to giving meaning to the saying that there's Hinduism abundance. And we have tried to explain this concept of Ubuntu in the context of the fact that it has become a business term, Ubuntu security, Ubuntu status, you name it. And if we don't focus on this and quickly say what Ubuntu means, in the context of in relation to community, we will lose the meaning. So we say the concept of Ubuntu is a social, cultural, and political, as well as an economic concept. It's multi-pronged. And it also relates to democracy, the system of democracy, and particularly African democracy, because that is an African concept. And again, Ubuntu in the context of community values, and that it is all embracing, it relates to a whole, a unit or a body. And therefore, in dealing with it, we should avoid the temptation to deal with a part and rather than the whole. And then it relates to community values and beliefs and practices. And therefore, it's closely linked to how we should define community, which the separation attempted to address. And in this case, we're saying community refers to a group of people who share common values, beliefs, and practices. And then there's a challenge that community in our daily usage of the word often refers to people who are sharing a common faith. And yet, people may be in community because they are in some municipality or in some Ilani because in that group. And yet, they belong to different religions. They have different cultures. And they speak different languages. And that is going to be quite pronounced since we have become a democratic nation and we have freedom to live wherever we like. So that is a challenge. Coming from that is the challenge of how we build unity in diversity. There are many communities in the country, but we need to contribute to the establishment of nationhood. That as different as we are one. And one other challenge is the fact that our history has entrenched false identity. So we are tasked to contribute towards the recovery of the true identity of the people of Somalia. And that we do through three distinct programs. Investigations and conflict resolution. We address that by receiving complaints from people and submissions with suggestions. And then we have to investigate the truth and how we can deal with them in order to resolve whatever conflict has been reported to us. And then we have a program called Research and Policy Development. And then one that's called public or community education and awareness, and then community engagement and capacity building. Those programs have been listed there in a particular order because it is important that we prioritize complaints because when people make those submissions, they are looking up to us to give some response. And so those complaints inform our research agenda. So those two programs are closely linked. And our research outputs and outcomes inform our public education program. And it is put on that diagram. So it goes in a clockwise direction from investigation, consciousness, and mission, that includes mediation, and then research, so that the research reports that we have then become resources for public education and awareness, and then we take that out to communities. We don't educate communities about the environment only. We also educate or bring about awareness about what are the characteristics of the various communities. Because one of the objectives here or the mission is that we must influence tolerance, peace, and stability in this community. Let me go back to what are the challenges here. Limited resources. And resources, one is referring to maybe first of all the fact that our budget is growing in a very slow range. From 03-04 there it was 7 million and in 09-10 it was 20 million. And one has noticed that it has been growing at a rate of 2 million, which is just the inflation addition. And one point that one needs to make is that while it grows like that, we believe that in the beginning, and since we are totally new institution, the starting point was just a startup amount. And one view we have is that it is important to cost what we are expected to do and what we can do in any particular year in order to get to a point where one can safely say we started off at a zero-based point. That limitation of financial resources has influenced a limitation also in the human resource capacity. By way of numbers in this case. We have been growing steadily, but we are nowhere close to having the hands that we need in order to do to address all the issues that I mentioned earlier. Let me go then into the specific programs that we have, as I mentioned. The first one is investigation and conflict resolution. And I did mention that our approach is anchored on a mediation approach. We do not intend to use the court of law as an approach that would bring about peace and tolerance. So we do mediate. In some instances, we have a complaint while already it is in front of the court of law, and we do negotiate and begin a dialogue with the lawyers and those who are affected. And I must say, we have been able, at least we do get people to talk and get them to be participants in getting to a point of common understanding. The research and policy development program is twofold. First of all, we look into the existing policies from the past and the current, in order to establish whether they are sensitive to the various cultures or religions. I'll put aside languages because of a big issue there. Maybe I should just mention it straight away that the laws and almost all, if not totally all of them, are still in two languages. And then one asks the question, how accessible are they to the rest of the people who may not be English speaking or African speaking? And so how can we then say people are not adhering to the legislative provision? But what we are looking at in particular now is whether they are sensitive to the various religious and cultural values. And the law, piece of legislation that governs the work of FPPA, we got an opportunity through the NDP to actually look at it. And we came to understand that, in fact, and they confirmed the FCPA is an animal welfare organization. And we came to discover that there are activists on the side who are animal rights people. And then we came to understand the difference. There are those who say animals should not be treated. And that is what FCPA. FCPA does not say human nature. They just say animals are almost like human beings. The manner in which you do it must at least afford them the welfare that they need. We also monitor the policy formulation process so that at least we influence in the, we contribute towards the prevention of insensitivity in the context of culture and religion and language. We are expected to make recommendations to the appropriate organs of state, to the various ministries, so that when bills become law, at least they have adhered to the cultural, religious, and linguistic rights. We assist also in the development of strategies, because our work cuts across education, housing, if I may mention that, a number of things, land restitution, which a person alluded to cases such as those. And we are establishing and we have to maintain a database of all organizations out there so that we work with them, because we cannot claim to be the custodians. We are making a contribution and so we have to work with them. Public education and information and awareness. We have to, the objective is to promote appreciation of the various cultural, religious, and linguistic communities. And so we are promoting diversity. And we have to make people understand the office and the role of the commission. The community engagement side of things is that we must make an attempt to reach out to the various communities. And you can imagine then the challenge there, because we won't find them sitting together. Sometimes we cut across communities as in states and communities as in provinces. And so that is why then we're expected we have to have a system of establishing community councils. And the Act requires that community councils be provincial and national. You can see then the thread that will run through various special communities. And we have to have a system of recognition of community councils. We'll kick off on this one. We have the guidelines. And so because they must be established in a prescribed way, we are drafting regulations in partnership with the collaboration with the ministry, so that the minister can have those regulations signed. One challenge, which forms part of the challenge of limited resources, is the fact that the Act says we must provide financial assistance to community councils. So once they are established, there is an expectation. As they work with us, we must enable them to do what we agree they will do. And so with the existing budget, it may not be possible to do that. We've looked at a whole host of potential partners. And looking at them, we thought at some point, we might say these are the 3 or 5. This is the number that is important. But we realize that each of them has a slice in our work. And so they are all equal to us, because all of them contribute towards the realization and observance and respect of the rights of the cultural relations community. For instance, if I mention, the National Geographical Names Council. The whole country is talking and fighting about the main thing is a necessary transformation imperative. And so there's a question that we need to respond to, the question that one may pose and ask me. Do we have anything to contribute in? So we have to respond, as the Chairperson of the Committee said, to topical issues that come up. And so sometimes we have to pause on what we are planning to do and respond to something that is on the table at that point in time. The houses of traditional leaders, and they are custodians of culture, religion, and language. And they are a partner. Museums are a partner to us because they accommodate and host and preserve artifacts that belong to cultural and religious communities. NU and UNESCO at the end. Definitely, as a country, we have community, we have municipal, we have provincial, we have national, and also we have international policy and legislative framework that we must make sure that we don't run into them all the time. Our business plan for this year is presented in a table form. And let me indicate straight away that we have two distinct objectives. The one relates to the in-house working, the administrative and management side of things. And we want to promote efficiency, compliance, and effectiveness, as well as accountability. So in administration, as you can see, the chairperson, the office of the CEO, the commissioner, because we deal with the administrative issues. And we have put policies in there in recognition of the fact that the body of commissioners, which is the commission, it should be more concerned with policy formulation. So that work is under that part. And you can see that we've allocated 5.3 million then for all the work that has been done. And then we come to, you mentioned corporate services, financial management, human resource management. And then the core business of the commission falls under the objective protection and promotion of their rights. And there are the programs that I mentioned before. And we have the research and policy development. I'm sorry, in putting the acronym there, it got reversed. It should be RPG, not RPG. And we have reserved 2.1 million days for all the activities. Let me mention the actual activities that we plan this year. And also indicates that these activities flow from what we have been doing in the year that is under evaluation now. We are getting into ethnographic research of the rights of passage. We have just a theoretical basis that we did previously. And we want to establish how the various communities observe and practice the rights of, for instance, death, initiation, marriage, and death, from birth to death. So that we understand how we do things. But one thing we have established straight away is that almost all communities do observe them. But how they observe them is the issue, is the difference. And in doing that also, we are trying to recover what was, and we are trying to establish what is currently happening and whether there are anything that needs to be carried through to the future. If I may take the example of death rights and all the activities that are associated with death, with death, I'm sure you will agree with us that there's a tendency to go overboard. which means we tend not to be focusing on the life of the passage in death, but we tend to be departing and things like that. And that has an effect in some other things, aspects of our life. We are looking at the policy review on religious education. As you may know, the Department of Education has a policy on religion education. And there have been some modelings and responses to that. If there happens within education, and then how do you handle it when you're classes or groups of learners that belong to different religious communities, that is a challenge. We are doing it in order to make a contribution and provide some advice maybe to the Department or Ministry of Education, so that whatever we try to do, we do it in the best possible way. Values in the education system, that's a broad topic. I can quote just an example of something that we're looking at in the next week, teenage pregnancy. It has been up, and education is, you know, meant to deviate from what it should be doing, educating people in according to the education system, because learners every day we find, every month or every year, there are many learners who fall pregnant, and then the whole system then falls flat. And we feel we have a niche today because there are cultural issues that we need to. And the question one can pose boldly here is whether a learner has the right to reproduce. It's a simple question. What would the various communities say? While you are a learner, can you bring up a family? Where is the priority? And then we are looking also at the theoretical research on naming. The naming process and how we go about naming and renaming lies in the ministry of art and culture. But is there a cultural angle to naming? What's naming? Money system, religious calendar. We are at an advanced stage to produce a report with recommendations. Looking at the calendar, the national calendar, that we have discovered has two religious holidays, both of which are Christmas. And all other events and periods that belong to other religions are there, are not in the calendar. But that's not the main focus for us. One of the components of our focus. The issue is, how can we as a nation afford everyone the right to observe some important events within a religious calendar? What will the labor force or the places of work do to make sure that Muslims observe it without regimentation. The challenge that we have the list from when we serve the mosque, we find the Muslim holy day, Jewish holiday. We are struggling to recover African holy day so that those people who belong to African religion or religion then can have their faith to observe their important day. I mentioned the area specifically. Well, 2.1 there. When public education, as I said, what we do there flows from research and research reports. And we engage there mainly in dialogue, seminars, and discussions, and conferences. And our focus group, target group, is the youth. Because in education we are trying to say, let's get what should be, and then we workshop youth so that our youth understand our values, because we've lost quite a lot through the past. And we've allocated 1 million from 82,000. The first thing that we do this time is to give the cultural value. I've mentioned the example that already we are running. The rite of passage, which is a report from the research company. The role of religion in self-community and identity development. And also the issue of religious holidays. As we investigate, we use what we have established to get confirmation at the same time to spread the information so that we have a common understanding. Investigations, I won't go deep into them, but just saying we have a long list of complaints and submissions that have been made. And one approach that we have is that we do say sometimes that a case has been closed. But the fact of the matter is that you don't close it and ask it because that flows into continuous investigation, continuous research, and also awareness. And once we get the two parties having a common understanding, we, you know, get the satisfaction that at least peace has been established and tolerance has been established. And then they become, those who may have complained, become part of us in going through community and bringing about awareness. So the total budget for the year is 15,447. We also have special areas of focus. We have to develop Jewish heritage. It is in the head. So we tend to be biased towards that so that we bridge the gap between the areas that have been advantaged and the areas that have been disadvantaged. We also are addressing the state of debt and all the undesirable outcomes and outputs within the institution of initiation of bonds, which happens in many communities. As you may know, we had hearings last year, and so we are working closely with the houses of traditional leaders, and they are very keen to have the thing cleaned up, and so that people continue to enjoy the right to the practice of initiation of bonds, but it needs to be done without, you know, any threat to the life of the people who are involved. Religious equality. Recently, we started on this and so we continue. We invited some departments here, including the Department of Home Affairs, the Department of Correctional Services, the Department of Education, asking them to tell us how they are managing religious diversity in their institutions. It was a very interesting and informative exercise. And we are happy that, you know, the various sectors, sections of government are becoming aware that they are working with diverse people, and so they need to be sensitive to their rights. The various practices I mentioned briefly earlier, we have a topic that is running from year to year. Do the dead have rights? R-I-G-H-T. Do they have rights? The right to burial and the right to do this and that and that. And that we can only answer by understanding the burial rights of the various communities. The mother tongue issue is another thing. And as you may it comes out of the cries of people about the challenges of the implementation of the quality in education on mother tongue teaching and learning. That is the one side that we are focusing on. And later I'm sure there will be a debate and that we all have to engage in vigorously once people start saying children or their children to be talking in Pakistan. So we are working closely with the departments here, the Department of Education, particularly the ones in provinces. As you know, education has been devolved to provinces. We attended recently a conference in Mpumalanga, and I'm sure Mpumalanga will have ideas on how we can improve the implementation. Let me just indicate this, that one key recommendation we are making is that since the Ministry and the Department of Education have limited resources to provide teachers in all the schools to be able to offer all 11, if not 12 languages, maybe a system of roving teachers could, you know, make a contribution that a club of schools, a neighborhood school, could be served by the same teacher for the same language. That's one recommendation we are making. Let me just leave the various, we have listed here, if you notice, the various complaints that we received. And we have ordered our business plan by quarter so that we can continue to monitor and evaluate our delivery. Thank you,
Chair. Thank you very much, Mama. For this informative presentation. I think it will come well, My take is that I think you must invest more on the on communication. Because you want the is really respected if you don't show that yet. One of the major things is that when we talk about this on the Kenyan issue, if you had a good marketer, you would have got a lot of leverage. In terms of meeting with Tony, hearing the same, meeting his PCA, and when they accept and agree, they will tell the public about it, so that people don't get scared and so on. And when we sit now with them, we listen to yourself. Say no, we have a right to complete human rights with them. Now, I'm saying, I think it's important, I mean, that you show that, let's make a clear example. When you see this human rights commission, the way, he has profiled himself. Now he has been with him. When the issue of human rights, he will be there. In that way, it makes people to know that there's a platform within which they can go and be able to express their things that they share. But still, the thing that I can't say is because the system, that's where it destroys our people. That you cannot know of yourself. And you see that you don't see. The European is better. Whether it's music, whether it's speaking, everything that is true for America is better. And that the value of the of yourself in yourself. If you play even music, you play Mbakanga, you are the barbarian of the down class. If you practice your ritual, you should be able to do it. This thing was certainly counted. It's the Indian community, Jewish, part of the area. But African, fundamentally, they don't believe in their culture. And your role is very minimal.
Yes, of course. And that's why, from our side, we believe that your role is critical, because we think that I'm able to begin to bring the dignity of our people.
It's a real dignity, not one.
But also to say that it's African United.
It's the next question in the context.
Now, to me, then I'm saying, I think something I need moment is about communicating clearly. Let me know if that's not mine. It's not about mine. It's about kindness. It's about understanding the situation where we were, the communication. It depends on your initial intention.
Colleagues, we've had the presentation. I was just there.
And we moved.
That's all we did.
Yeah, no one like that.
Now, Chair, I think it's just to appreciate the good presentation and the good work that they are doing. And I just to ask you and someone of your sentiments, Chair, that I think the communication is very important. It's an extremely important issue. The fact that all of us can associate to a song from by one American that I've never met. Anyway, it is because of this communication. And they are very good. Even our own media institutions, flagging our own media institutions. And because we are so eager to make a lot of money, we are allowed to do that. And that's why our own culture is very fascinating. And I think possible by the way, it's time to do that. Again, Jefferson, if you look at the strategy used in by the parliament and everything, to undermine. This is the same communication. To actually use our own institutions, our own community, in some way that we can change our own culture. And I think you're going to be against, or in that context, what we should say to the commission that you're doing a very good job. But when one looks at your potential partners that you have identified in phase 10, you seem to have left some of the entities that you think you can also play around there. And every Sunday when I listen to Radio Mutadina, I hear my father Matahadi. I don't see his financing coming. And it's plenty very difficult. In trying to decolonize people's minds, promoting other people's minds. The second important potential partner that we have left, which is supposed to play a very big role now, especially when we talk about the moral regeneration. It's your moral regeneration movement. And I think I see that your project is very important. You use that institution to spread this message, your politics. It reaches out to you, maximize your outreach through this institution. I don't know, maybe this is not true, but I suspect the staff in a way is supposed to be a partner because they are dealing with a crime. And you can't fight a crime without talking about re-salvation of the money. So it is my view that take, once you have identified these issues, again, really, identify other key important areas of the community to promote your culture. Chairperson, I thought I might just make an introduction. Thank you very much. Otherwise, I'm happy that they are doing it.
Thank you.
because being related to the opposition party, why do you talk going to the court and say no? Because if you look at what they are doing in our station, so that it's this European foreign thing. Now, what it means in essence is that you, those who intend not communicating the message, what are they saying? But if you go to other countries, you rarely, some of the time, the way you hear that 70% of what you listen to music is foreign. In other countries, you listen to music. Whether you go in Africa, you go to Brazil, you go in, you listen to music. The foreign music has become very new. Now, those are things that must turn around. Institutions like this begin to engage. But ethics is a public concern for God's sake. It is supposed to be ensuring that response to this. Therefore, I see them as a confrontation partner because you talk to darling, say darling, and let's work and talk. Let's work together on the citizenry, total citizenry empowerment. There's not enough anything to do. The total citizenry empowerment. This is all it's about. They went to the other one.
Hardline cases are being said. Don't just want to get me
then for the last one, says general music. I'm also a music lover, and I started a band in the Catholic Church 16 years ago. It's going well now. But you know, if I look at music and look at our performance, coming into what you are saying, Chief, our performance and our people are, our artists are dying for. We don't get the exposure on TV. You see, SABC was exposing and putting advertising with these artists. But not only that, when it comes to this performing and sitting free, we found the African. And we are always just brought in just to color in or just to be there. Because we are facing local. Even in the recording, we use the combination against our performance. You'll find 1, 2, 3 that play in French and Bars, and only 2, 3, or 4 that align out of it. But music. It's something that is important to our people, and you'll find 90% of them in our township, and they get nothing, no assistance. And that is part of keeping the township there. We are born with music, we are born with that. We have it, and we are not developing it. And that is a huge concern for me. I think you could do much more there. And if you look at festivals, I have a fear, and festivals coming up. I can't festivals. Nothing wrong with it, but there is no other festivals that are coming so strongly to the fore, bringing up other cultures. I was in the legislature. I fought on a book that Dick McKean, the chemistry of arts and culture, and I said, how much are you giving for the Uchuan and Kaar in Kaar. He said, you don't want to know, I don't want to tell you, sorry. But how much are you giving to Atlanta State? How much are you giving to a state in Google Earth? And you see the difference in the location. That must cover.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, sir. Well, you see, our responsibility is to prevent our on the honorable man, John Master One. Very well. There is no way that you cannot join here anyway. And which is a very good thing, because it talks the citizens that are there on the ground in terms of what has happened. The issue of the things you see, I must have made it. I'm not talking about things around that initiation program, that was kept. When you're discussing the culture, that's your task to protect the culture. And they must know that you are there to guide and assist them. I mean, like on certain things that are there, you are supposed to set for the core. That they share with your friends and say, there's this thing, what do you think? Because you are from the same side, all of you. You are fighting for government, for education, for the government. They can say, engage you to do what you think about. I mean, you look at the program. There's this traditional music. It was an hour before you attend to the minister, half past 10 on Friday. You can see that the orientation is more new. And people used to say, no, we can't play certain things because it's a film. Yeah. Even the movies, the film is a little more fun. They don't see the program. That is, this is the program for music. Now, the issue, public will cut at them because it affects them. It affects music, the music, the success of music. And then you have a very much.
Yeah, Senator, you really covered the matter of what I wanted to say. In terms of the distortion of our culture, I know they are aware that they are talking about the Umsun Zulka, who
不是人家专门的这个类。有的地方呢，就在这上面的机会，几乎年轻人也能够在这些地方，希望这里能看到，能够在里面来上。那么他这个例子把这些东西控制的艺术的在什么和中国学习的艺术的参与的我现在是说这是这些这些这些我的 love to hear you more about those things because your mind is really very sensitive in the psychic world. The psychic world. All the people, you are the one that's supposed to be vocal, but you really have to say, you can't throw on some of these things to say, this can't be done in this country because everybody is protected by law. But I think, yeah, I think you can do better. You can do better really. If you don't have a marketing strategy, first of all, who's going to say that you don't have to market? Yes. 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 Me completing the characters in the soul of the material or a country. You know, I think that this culture, where every year we're having our cultural day, and you come to that function, you see how we look, how I wear my attire, sometimes I my own kids. You might think that I'm not great. I'm doing this about it because if I don't do it myself, who will do it for me? If I don't promote my own country, who will do it for me? So good. And this thing has built on because in the community, even people, ordinary people, some of them who just came from other areas, who don't even know about our country, come every October in my time, everybody will be ready to say, and what is now with our second chair, what should come and so on. The chairman of the council also attended the Masham, who was our guest speaker last week. He was so embarrassed because everybody was in the leadership, he was relevant. He was with his nice tie, and all of that way. So wonderful. Not people who are for what? He was talking about this thing and something is something else. You know? Now, people like ourselves are better placed and advise the community to say, guys, you are missing opportunities here to show that we are us. Yes, we don't have any account other than here. And we've got nowhere to boast of our Africanness. And our being can only be promoted for ourselves. And you know, if there's any person who will speak on our behalf to say we are going to promote our culture, not only the country, but only ourselves. So I'm saying you can do better. You can do better. Can you say your personal education? You thinking so well. Then who want to say? Yeah, the story capable to make the entire process is the good one. Yeah, it's not accelerated. Accelerated. Yeah, we will get that. Now, our history has entrenched false identity. You read it right, 100%. You read it. On the head. Now,
How am I going to live in this? We are really going to pay this customer, but if you can help your plan as to how I'm going to do it, it's true. Now, what I said, is the same. You know, you look, whatever is happening, anything after 10 is barbaric.
Mm.
Only something from you, that's not.
Why? But why do you allow our country to be diluted? Why do you allow this?
I mean, I think we must declare war on this one. We have to declare war about this. I know what we're going to win. One of the stakeholders I want to check as to what you are negotiating with the Department of Agriculture. Because that's one of the stakeholders that I'm not going to see here. I think that's the one is going to go to. We need to put them there. I suspect you are saying it's just a case of your finger. There's no way you can act in the department of other parties. There's no way.
I would understand.
Wonderful. Now, your budget. Unless if the chief there was some kind of negotiation about this budget. Is that all you can say about the budget and not slide number 40? Is that all you can say about the budget? Is that all you can say? In this parliament. No, please. I think I should say something. And I'm saying this in front of the finance minister department here, because I don't think we won't even take us this one line budget thing.
Like
our policy.
So there's more from this slide one. The breakdown.
Because we wanted to get exactly how we spend on what, so that it flows each other, that's what I said. But after I really put this 15.77 here, I thought from there, then it was just unhedged. That is what I was saying. But in terms of provinces, we have to hear exactly in each province, how we spend the budget on what. That's what we want to hear. So that when we hammer this guy here, that it gives you more money. It must have been more sense. But now I don't know what must I hammer him on, when they want the money. Because I can't see the popo here. Where is the popo here, Madam Madiwa? Where is the popo here, Madam Madiwa? So that I know what I'm doing about taking the popo. Nothing. You see? Now, how do I hammer him? Look, he's smiling. He's saying because, he's not giving him the chance. You really say it today. You're a star, bro. Now, as I said, I think we can do better. Nevertheless, we appreciate what you're doing, but I think there's no more.
Thank you very much, Well, what differentiates no one rich as an token? What differentiates us to the national assets? Is that we cannot just count the documents, the national assembly, and that they know our own people. To go to the slant of the one who tries to put them in province, what are you doing in each province? And then, in terms of programs and projects, but at the same time, then, how much you spend, to make sense for the slant of province, as opposed to national assembly, you know, the national. Look at political discourse, look at provinces, and how I saw the Russian as a man from the
The question is that in the moment, the back in future, that must not that, talk about that during the season. So,
I think you're biased to Amapundi,
the CEO.
Yes.
You're
biased to that level.
Yeah, man, I think you will invite us this in the
I will.
But I think in the commission, we'll be able to have. Because the experience we bring the talk on each other, you have a practical experience on the inside. Particularly when our colleagues show that is rooted on the cultural heritage of ours. Babani.
Thank you, sir. I think in terms of the sun and the characters, yeah, the strength and the budget of the commission, that was the challenge. Maybe its contribution has been alluded to. Maybe a drop in the ocean because of that strength and because of the budget of this commission. Maybe to some extent, because of that, it is not in a position to sell itself to the fullest. But for me, I think this is a very important commission to be given consideration in terms of human resources and the accompanying budget. So that these services can be more and more decentralized. And for so doing, I think I've also looked at the potential partners. But I think there is a critical and very crucial potential partner. That is the Department of Education, which I think the Commission should also infiltrate. You know, because of our history, the education of the majority of the people here has been at a very low level, at the lowest level, to an extent that it has become necessary for those who can afford to send their children to multiracial schools and modern state schools. But when they come back from the multiracial schools and modern state schools, they have lost everything about their culture and the background of their community. To an extent that I had some young students of at high school level arguing about how does one become a king? They are at high school. How does one become a king? They don't know. They hear that Tuck Etting there, on the podium, is a key. How does one become a key? They don't know that. They have grown up at a modern state school or multiracial school. But I think the Department of Education perhaps should be overloaded and have a cost related to what you are actually promoting in terms of them knowing their background, their culture, and their languages. And some of them, those that we send to these schools that we regard or perceive to be better, cannot even spell African surname. If you say write so-and-so surname, they can't spell it. A person has passed grade 12. He or she can't spell an African surname at all. Now, if you go to New Zealand and Australia, you will find that the Aboriginal people there, the Maori, their cultures were destroyed by colonization to an extent where now they don't know whether they are Maori or whether they are European. They are just in the middle. They don't know where they are. Although that is not likely to happen here, but we can find that situation where the best is. If you give your child the name, you give your child the cultural name, and you say, spell your name, he or she can't spell your name. Unless you say, Sarah, then you will be able to spell. My wife is saying, my brother should spell your name.
So that was interesting because the next one is most of the time in the ages. I say, hey, so how is the language talk based on the temple of the age? say, no, it's a postscript. I said, no, postscript. I said, no, you are colonized by postscript. That thing was other than because there's a church here in the John 3 and the Bible. He went for one time, you know, he says, I'm not here. He says, no, I'm here.
This guy, he's a nice control.
He said, when he calls with a slanting way and so on, he's a nice.
Coming. industry. In fact, our outreach strategy, as far as that is concerned, usually when we have programs, we choose a rural area, sort of a back of the woods kind of area, and then we choose an urban area in each program. So we were doing that. And so that I don't miss it, in fact, I think we acknowledge with appreciation the offer that was made by the chapter. But it would be very interesting to have a roundtable discussion. Even at the level, because we are new and therefore we are not embarrassed to say we don't know. At the level at which you can begin to engage on some of what you want to have as important and pertinent in each respective area that you come from. And we might not be able to have an outreach that goes to all the provinces at the same time, but we might have a rollout plan that actually recognizes the limited nature of resources and at the same time the nature of the problem. The list, just to say, in fact, is more indicative of people we work with than a definite list. For instance, I've just come out from the last 2-3 days from the Department of Arts and Culture policy review process. And we are engaging in reviewing various policies with the Department of Arts and Culture. And to say, in fact, again, there one was able to interact with MEC of Arts and Culture Sport from the various provinces in a way that we began to raise pertinent issues and to ask for really organic relationships with them, that the relationships we have are not accidental. And so that at one level we are able to deal with some of the issues of cultural diversity that exist within provinces and so on. And the other challenge that was put before us by the SAPO Commission was we need, when it's asked about the map, reminded me that the SAPO Commission said one of the things that we need to develop as a commission is what they call cultural profile of problems. And I always use the example of what we were talking that there is a taken for granted idea that anybody who's African in KwaZulu-Natal is Zulu. That, for instance, you find the king actually wanting to say it's the kingdom of the Zulu and therefore it must be called Shakaland or whatever name it is. But that act in itself, when you begin to appreciate and understand that in KwaZulu-Natal there are people now who are then saying that no, we're not Zulu, we are Abatwa, who are saying now that no, we're not Zulu, we are Abakuti. And the question for us at the Commission is how do we create space for those communities to recover who they are and so on. So that's one level at which we are dealing with the issue of cultural identity. Now the second thing that we can actually raise is we do work with traditional leaders and we make limited partnerships. We work with the National House, but then we make certain interventions with certain traditional leaders groups. For instance, in Limpopo, we are engaging with them with regard to the whole idea, complaint rather, that there is something called being. The argument is that it should be regarded as the traditionally good one, because being is simply confirming the imposition of power that was effected by the apartheid king. Whereas you get Isipulani with more people who speak that language than those who traditionally would call themselves apartheid. So we're dealing with traditional leaders in the Capricorn.
Okay.
So
you see now that the invitation should be coming is for me to come and but the point I'm making is we're actually dealing with that in that area. And in the Eastern Cape we are dealing with traditional leaders in terms of the whole problem. But then we intervening in the condolence area with regards to the issue of the death in initiation schools and so on. And we're raising questions about how do you integrate whatever is mentioned there with the broader issue. But the other thing that, in fact, the traditional leaders have requested us to do in the Eastern Cape, which we're looking at as a pilot, is how we can design a program in which we can restore the word is not enough, but the dignity of chieftaincy. Still, the word dignity is not saying everything. But the issue here is the chiefs in the Eastern Cape feel that there is a weakness that is characteristic of some traditional leaders there. And so they've asked us to not only bring the historical memory of what constitutes a chief, but also to find ways in which we can engage with traditional leaders so that the dignity of the institution is restored. And then we, in the Western Cape, we work with young people. In fact, I should tell the commissioner to tell the next youth democracy camp in Propertor. In the because we tend to, I think, I must admit, we go along the coast. Mm-hmm. We are not here, we are in Othoren, George area, but we don't go up. But the point I'm making here is simply to say that the way that our programming does as an overall thing is to try to do one thing in a rural area and another thing in an urban area. I must concede without any fear of contradiction that we are weak in our marketing. I don't have somebody touching my face literally and figuratively. Again, I think it's a preoccupation of wanting to set programs in place, finding staff, and all of that sort of day-to-day experience kind of. So I will definitely concede that. In fact, it's one of the things that we've decided that now that we're going to the second half of our system, we need to be able to operate at a higher level. We've identified what we call a stabilization committee that would look into the work conditions and so on and create a conducive environment for the staff that we bring on board. But also to be able to not only people that ask for money, but to actually be able to show how, in fact, the nature of the people we have as staff are actually reflecting what we think we are going to do. In other words, if we are saying we will do policy analysis, we need a lawyer, bush or no bush, who will help us do policy analysis. So that we don't say we are doing policy analysis, and when you look at the people we have, are all sort of non-policy analysis type people. So if it's broad speaking, I can talk to that. I'll just be able to talk to the issue of the budget.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. The mismatch between what we intend doing and the tools at our disposal that would enable us to achieve the intended output and outcome. I've shown this slide on page 29. To indicate the limitations, the resource limitations, that yes, while we are not provincial, we are aware that we cannot work outside the system of provinces. However, even within that system, as I indicated, that the state and community within the context of our mandate may not be synonymous. Therefore, we work with communities within provinces, but we do use provinces in our brain. If you look at the human life of the page, there are 30 there. 30 in government privacy means 30,000. And we said in brackets 10 times 3, which means that 3 is the number of activities at 10,000 each. And those activities would be activities that may not cover more than 1,000 people, which means a small community within a province. Not that we intend reaching out that 3 in the whole country. It is a limitation of resources that forces us to just have 3 at 10,000. You can imagine, what do you do for 10,000? 10,000, right? We speak in thousands rather than in millions in this condition. That is the limitation. So we have commissioners that have been allocated a responsibility for each of the 9 provinces. I tell you, in a year, if we have had an activity, it could be one in one little part of the province. You can't even replicate it, repeat it in many other areas. Even if one were to go by municipality, we cannot cover all the municipalities in those provinces. It is a fact that the issue of resources limits only the number of activities within the key performance area that we can have. The chairperson touched on our age, and that in the first few years, or 1 year or two, we are arguing for this, we're preoccupied with setting ourselves up from nothing. As a result, we only now have one office in Johannesburg servicing the whole nation. Nobody thinks no office in any province, let alone any country. And if we were to start even in the new year, I can assure you, we would not be able to have 9, nor can we have 5, nor can we have 3. So it will be an incremental process, and we will still not be known in many communities in the near future because of the limitation of the process. You look at the next one. We said 50, that's 50,000. That means 10 times 5. So we are conscious of the fact that we need to be seen we need to exist in the provinces and be active. But we will not go with a bang. And we are happy to also announce that this is a fact that we're trying also to unpack our minds and understand it ourselves before we go blind. And I'm happy to say we've produced a judgment that describes and explains the environment in which we work in order to inform the truth. In fact, now we have since realized that in actual fact, we are not to look at the electricity, nor are we to look at the 11 communities as they are commonly known after languages. There are many more communities from South Africa, originating in South Africa. And as the Constitution says, we are responsible for the protection and promotion of the rights of all who are within the country. If you can speak Portuguese, they have the right to the language. You can see, we cannot be dealing with South African communities, I mean by citizenship. But even the people who are accommodated in South Africa, for people who are in headline, they have the right to their CRNN. So we have a mammoth task to address, and we welcome the offers and the cooperation and the advice that has been given. and we are committed, and we want to work on the foundation and make sure that the many religious communities, the many cultural communities, and the many linguistic communities exercise their rights. But more importantly, coexist so that we become a rainbow nation in the process of the world.
I can't miss this class about the part of it. That now I think on the positive side is to say that we are actually working with Mutaka, and he's definitely an integral part of our program that we do. He's in fact he's what we would call a chief informant on our African religion. Significantly, it's very important. And we are in conversation with Karen at the moment to actually, what's the word, to set two programs, one on Africa Day and another one with young people. So we're actually working together. But mentioning that I was reminded of something else, that Parliament set down to develop a new chamber that was set up, and they didn't think we could have a two-thirds way to contribute. But the point about it is what you are saying, the extent to which when people are making decisions, do we come to mind? That's really the so I'm not quoting you at that time to actually use that as a very recent example. Of that thing where we then, because one of the things that in terms of protecting the culture, one of the things that we say that one of the things we are saying, it's important to ask what is indigenous about what you are saying. See, because the average person will say, no, we want something indigenous. I'll give you an example. Fortunately, changes its name. And it calls itself Nelson Mandela. But then when you go to Nelson Mandela's biography, Nelson Mandela refuses the name, said, this name was imposed upon me despite my talent. The name Nelson. He says, the name Nelson was given to me, forced upon me by the Catholic sisters who were teaching at that time when you went to school. So what we are then asking, see, the commission, is to interrogate those things, so that people don't rush to name places just because they are saying, no, no, this is indigenous. One of the other names in the Eastern Cape, of course, is the debate about Makana and Mele and all of that. And so we are saying that in terms of protecting culture, what is it that we are protecting? Is it just the memory we have, or is it embedded somewhere in the lives of the people? And how do we then begin to appropriate what we would regard as historically correct? That's really one of the challenges, and that's where the Mutaka even becomes important, because as you know, I like to call it, it does the mental archaeology, and takes you back to Egypt, you see. Yeah. And then we begin to have an appreciation of the development and how human settlement, because even today, even amongst the best among us, you hear people talking about how Africans came into South Africa, and yet we also accept that that is part of Africanian historiography that was intended to justify the colonization of the Cape. But people still use it as an argument. The minister of the Shaka MPs marauding and chasing everybody out to explain historical settlements within South Africa. Again, perpetuating the same myth so that it justifies another political agenda. And we are saying as a commission, at an intellectual level, how do we avoid repeating and giving truth to stories that we created in order to oppress us. And then of course also locate, you know, we used to have Pan Rippic Day in South Africa in April 6th. And how many people know that Makana on April 23 said that the guns, the bullets of the settlers will turn into water? And do we celebrate that? Does it become part of our everyday? So those are the kind of what we call historical memory. The attempt to correct the historical record at one level and at another level to be able to put on the public space what we regard as a history beyond the contested history. And then lastly, we were also in conversation with the National Heritage Council, because one of the things that they identified last year, it has to do with music. They had a an award ceremony of indigenous music that they had in Kwazulu Natal on the Sunday after Heritage Weekend. And the point they were making there is, how do you then move from this national one to provincial one, at which you encourage local indigenous music? Let's call them competitions or festivals, where then they are able to flourish and then have an annual thing at the end of the year. So we're talking to them about how they are actually doing that. But as I said, the problem is the old story. If a rose grows in Oakwood West, who will know how beautiful it is?
Thank you very much for that input, and I think that for the input that has been made. I think we're great that we organized a meeting amongst ourselves, meaning that Mario and Mama Tiba will link up in terms of but I think as a precursor to that, it would be good that we give us a picture that you've talked about. That the one that just said you have. Mm-hmm. So I thought we don't matter from both, because we are better understanding. It's not something, it is not saying the only thing. It's not in the blend of shared understanding, but general knowledge. It becomes a great deal, because the one of the romantic at times. Now, I think you have such a great deal to ingrain an element of understanding this issue. I think we agree with that. At the same time, the government also said that I think the Australian Department is more critical in changing history that was important. Was it just them damaging in that respect? Well, thank you very much for your presence. I think your relationship is growing. It is getting stronger. Once we are at the same page, all of us, we can be able to speak with one voice and ensure that we get more resources, so we can touch base even every region, wherever we come from, as much as a bush migration.
Yeah.
You are able to reach. Nothing at the short range, and you can see it because you are soft as an institution. Which I think something else is working with the cards, because we reach the location board before your class. They are speaking properly, speaking themselves. Today is a depressing day. Combat is freaking an institution. They are happy with it. Now, it's not helping me a lot, because it was good to be a careless. Thank you very much. I think that thing about 5 minutes late, they are down, allow setting up, and they have tea and enjoy tea.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
But that is depending upon the
So I think that way, they know that the conflict has been at least a place of all kinds of conflict. Oh, but we don't know.
Jefferson, thank you very much. Mr. Federer will do the following. He's the former chairperson of the board. He's based in the Western Cape. That's why they asked me. That's how it works. I'm just going to allow you to do the following. And then I'll get to the public.
Thank you very much, Mr. Federer. As I'm instructed by Mr. Spokane, I have to basically interrupt you that or follow my point. Yes, indeed, it is a norm for every interrupter portfolio committee or for any stakeholder now to be as a secretary to do the following. I think somewhere, somehow, I need to do that. We were here last year in August. Then we reported to the portfolio committee, made the assessment for the financial year in 2005 and 2006, as presented in our annual report. I think it was a chairperson then, so this sort of my photo of the chairperson. Then in May 2006, also the board of the local government further resolved to support the sector in achieving its sectoral priorities by collaborating with various organizations and government departments. To this extent, memoranda of understanding were entered into with the National Treasury, the PPLG, IMFO, South African Council of Property Valuers, FA Institute of Film Engineers, and the DPW on various EPWP related projects. Unfortunately, the chairperson is not listening to me, so I feel so intimidated.
No,
I cannot find the chairperson. I have to basically wait for you to complete the get off. Thank you very much. Chairperson, I need not to go word by word when I'm not doing this. I assume that now this document was circulated and people should have been sort of affiliated and self-aided. Other sort of memorandum of understanding were entered with the following organization. I'm not going to basically read the organization, but the organizations are in front of us. So I will then sort of skip that one and go to the last one. The last one is basically sort of an indication of the strategic priority areas that have been approved for funding from sort of discretionary funds for year 2006 to 2010. Following the report, the stakeholders will discuss that accordingly based on the following strategies. On the left-hand side, you will see that now these are the strategies that we have to embark on. Then in the middle, these are the projects and the project names. And also on my right-hand side, this is the method of delivery. There's no need for me to basically read that. And I think that you can be able to read it, right? I assume so. And I'll hand over now to Ben Morgan. I'm also sort of instructing him to basically sort of give us a presentation.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair of the portfolio. We need to apologize that we should have given you a draft annual report. And because the annual report, as you know, is not ready for presentation to Parliament by the Minister of Labour. Around August, we would be able to give you an annual report with the audited financial statements. What we are going to do is just to update you on the progress from where we reported last, and we have included last financial year's annual report. Just for you to see a link between where we were, what achievements we had the previous year, and where we headed. The presentation, we're not going to delve a lot onto the narrative component of the presentation. Safe to say, we need to indicate why we're telling you about the sector skills plan, the importance thereof. The sector skills plan is our baseline document. We take a cue from that. It is a product of extensive research. The research is collaborative. We share data with the demarcation board and with other agencies.
And so if you have access to even the latest demarcation board and sense of powers and functions, you see the problems that local governments are experiencing, which are for those municipalities that require critical support in terms of skills, which areas do we need to make an intervention. So we're not going to bore you with that detail. As I say, we share data, we share, and they use some of our information, we use some of their information. However, on that basis, we are able to see where the areas of need are in terms of intervention, sector priorities, and we allocate funds accordingly in terms of the interventions that we think are appropriate to respond to the sector challenges. And I'm just going to list the areas where there are absolute shortages identified. There is the engineering and electrical and cable, technicians and artisans of all types, in municipal planning, particularly with urban planners, development planners, including LED and IDP, environmental health, emergency and disaster, including finance. These are areas of absolute need. Some of them are areas where we need greenfield qualifications, low qualifications that are NQF-based, where we have to start from. There are also significant gaps that were noted in the following strategic areas. Strategic management, including leadership management, project and contract management of all types, financial management, basic financial systems and administration, human resources, basic literacy and numeracy. And you would see also that if you are keeping track, that there is an intervention from the presidency with the 6 billion rand allocated for literacy in the country over the next 3 years with various interventions by the Department of Education. And we as CICAS also are playing a role. But it's an area where within the sector where a number of people who are employed do not have the basic literacy and numeracy, and you will see what interventions we make. What we did there for Jefferson in response to that, we said it is well and good to want to do everything for local government, and either as the CETA or as DPLG or other SALGA or other agencies, but we felt that given the 5-year strategic agenda of DPLG, which has been commonly endorsed by all the key stakeholders, we needed to identify areas where we are going to spend the limited funds we have. And those are the 5 key areas that where we're spending money: infrastructure, including service delivery, and these infrastructure interventions are according to APTA initiatives. It's financial viability, it's community-based participation and planning, it's management and leadership, and it's other basic education and training. They are literacy and numeracy areas. So in the next 5 years, so even if we come next year, what we will be telling you in August is saying, in terms of the CETA spending of its funds, of its discretionary funds, we will be looking in these 5 key areas. Nothing more, nothing less. Because we think that's an area where there's critical weakness in the sector for us to ensure that the sector really is able to meet its challenges. There will be different projects, but those projects will be linked to each of the key strategic priority areas. The one you'll see under infrastructure, it's a question, we have a project this year that we're busy with, infrastructure asset maintenance. You'll be shocked to know that most of the municipalities don't know the status of their infrastructure. And I did not tell you that with all the power outages, with all these things that we are experiencing. Simply because there hasn't been a system, and what we have been doing that in terms of infrastructure asset management, we're working closely also with DPLG in terms of the MOU. One, in terms of developing a greenfield qualification around infrastructure asset management. It's not only about the technical engineering skills, but there's a financial component also. And there are issues of service delivery maintenance in terms of with DPW. Is accident training technicians for maintenance of infrastructure, and of course, electricity, water, and roads. I'm just going to take that as an example, and maybe the second one, which is key.
The method of delivery that we need, experience has shown us in the last 5 years that the answer to this is not taking everybody to a classroom and hope that by putting them in the classroom they'll come out there and be able to maintain their own. The answer that lies there is that yes, there is room to indenture new learners who are new entrants into the labor market, into formal programs for them to acquire technical skills. But you also have to leverage on the capacity that currently exists within municipalities of those people who don't have a formal qualification but have experience, who are called spanner boys or general makers. We found that most of those people, in any event, are the ones that are doing infrastructure maintenance, but they don't have a paper to prove that they have the knowledge or the experience. We also say there are other people who are assisting the spanner boys or whatever the language that's being used. And you'll see why I'm using this notion of spanner boy as we give it. I'll just highlight the statistics. That have knowledge by observing, that we think if they're properly mentored and coached into the job, because we need to respond quickly, while the ultimate objective is to upskilling people and ensuring that at the end they come out with a paper, but we need to ensure that people have got a hands-on skill to assist in the dealing with issues of maintenance, backlog, and infrastructure management, whilst working towards ensuring that at the end they get qualified. And the biggest mistake that maybe CCAP has been doing, we've been concentrating more on ensuring that people have a paper and not looking at the challenges at hand. So yes, once the paper is required at the end, what value are we adding in responding to the sector challenges, irrespective of what sector you're working in ensuring that the sector is able to meet the question. With respect to financial viability, within the municipal environment, we don't have resident capacity, internal capacity, internal audit. It's a function that is largely outsourced to private sector. And the old issues of fruitless expenditures, of corruption and fraud, they are not detected early because that capacity of internal audit, it's not a question of performance, just the institutional performance, whether the organization is able to meet its own performance objectives, whether it has scorecards, are those performance objectives measured, and so forth, because that function, not only on the financial side, but also overall performance, that function is non-existent. We also are responding to that in terms of a number of interventions. What is a key challenge in our sector is that most of the functions are driven by legislation. So anything and everything that the municipality does is informed by one or other piece of legislation. And the last count we took of key pieces of legislation that impact the function of local government, 136. And there's likely to be more than that if one does an intense audit. So the key issue now with the advent of the Municipal Property Rating Act is that by a certain time, municipalities must be able to do evaluations, they must be able to implement the property rating in accordance to the prescriptions of the Act. But the stark reality is that there are only 128 employed property valuers in municipalities, and largely those are in some of the metros. The rest of the municipal environment is contracting that service, it's private property valuers. And if I use my own municipality, for instance, in Echo Lane, that function is outsourced to two companies at a great cost for the next year. So I'm talking that because I first hand information. The issue that I want to raise, Chairperson, is that our CETA is different from all other CETA in the sense that we are more concerned about one, dealing with issues of community-based learning and participation. It's about strengthening democracy. It's about assisting municipalities meet their constitutional mandate. It's about, and that includes poverty alleviation and local economic development. It's not about, at the end, the number of people we can get into training and those people getting employment. Because our sector is not poised for growth. Our sector is not an employment sector where there'll be production, you would have to increase capacity. It's the basic sector. So that's what makes us different from other sectors. And when I told the Minister of Labour, he said, if you do
evaluate us.
DCMC will say, we have to ensure that for each elected representative, they have a functional work committee. And in the next 2.5 years, in the next 30 months, we need to have at least 80,000 work committees constituted and those people being trained. Now, we're not seeking to employ those people. The center is not going to absorb them as new entrants into them, but the focus is strengthening participative democracy and all other issues. So, Jefferson, I've just spoken about maybe why we would be spending, the rationale for us to be spending money in those countries. We have, therefore, in terms of that framework, developed an intervention, what we call an integrated training and development framework for municipalities and traditional leadership. Incidentally, yesterday we went to see Nkosi Philo Uzolishi around endorsement of the programs that we want to start in the KZN province. And so Prof there long because we're working closely with them around the district. And it was a request from both this, from the portfolio committee, joint sitting last year, the select committee, for us to respond in that area. And we've made significant progress in that. But this framework that we've looked at, Shepherd, is a framework that deals with firstly the induction phase of councillors, which we completed jointly with Salga. And it deals with the first entry into understanding local government, the issues of community participation and facilitation, which deals with largely ward committees and councillors, is the qualification at NCS level 2, which we've registered with SAPA and will be rolling out jointly with DPMG, for which we've set aside an amount of 18 million to kickstart that process. The second part thereof is the community facilitation and governance, the qualification that we've registered also. That's looking really at council members who are elected in terms of understanding community participation, driving that, and issues of governance and oversight. And then the third element is the leadership, Mr. Jack's program, the ML leadership and Lobola program, for which we registered the qualification. We are also the HQA for all these qualifications, which has kick-started this year, the pilot project, and I'm not going to speak to that. PNG is running. But you can see, Shepherd's also the collaboration is beginning to bear fruit because we're not duplicating efforts. Our initiatives are coordinated. And the last one that we've registered last week is the certificate in National Certificate in Municipal Operations. While we brought that program, or that certificate program in particular, we've seen time and time and again that the new entrants into the municipal environment, people say, for various reasons, and I won't look at those who don't have the academic qualifications, but I'll look at those, even those who have academic qualifications, rather than the appropriate academic qualifications, who fail because they come in at a very senior level without having a background in the municipal environment, without understanding issues that drive which affect the legislation, the key drivers, and there's no one to support them to understand those, and they fail. And hence you can see the number of Section 57 appointments that we have. You can read the newspaper every day. You'll see why people are not being reemployed for various reasons. So we think that in many instances the system has set up people for failure, there's no appropriate support mechanism. So Jefferson, we then feel that if these people have, for instance, this measure certificate in municipal operations, coming with a relevant technical background, it assists them to be able to employ their technical expertise, but also understanding the contextual elements or the context of the environment within which they are working. I have not addressed the right-hand column in terms of the interrelationship between the community facilitation and the community participation qualifications with the CDW, which we reported to you last year. But there are very nice striking similarities in terms of the CDW program, which was developed by us and funded by us. But we think also in areas, Jefferson, where some of the people do have the qualification, the experience and expertise, You can RPL them. Some don't have a formal qualification. You can RPL them without taking them through a formal program again. Do an assessment to see where they're at, and then they can access further needs. And the issues of ABET, even in this area, are still very tricky. Jefferson, this is what would interest you. Maybe I need just to preface our frustration, and it's something that we're dealing with. Our theater, every 5 years, when there are municipal elections, there is a lull period, because the board of the theater is comprised of councillors who are deployed by South. And 50% labor, and then we do have a strategic partner in PPMG. There was the elections in March 1, 2006. And effectively from March 1, 2006, we had an interim board, which was reconstituted in August 2006. So you have a period where, and it's the beginning of the financial, end of the financial year, into the new financial year, where there is no mechanism for decision making, and hence resulting in a delay in implementing the program. So the, as you see, what we present to you as projects that have been approved in November 2006, it is as a result of that lag, given the nature of how deployments are done in the government, a matter which we would be addressing also the next strategic plan. But those are the projects that we have approved, which we are currently implementing. We're training 200 internal audits. Those are internal audit technicians. We also are having a joint project with KPMG, which is a Devo Trust under the chairpersonship of Dr. Koto, of placing internal audit technicians or internal audit graduates in municipalities as a way of leveraging capacity for the sector. But for the 200, we are training of those 168 are new intakes, learn up on the internal audit learnership with a partner, financial services teacher. And for that, we're spending $3.5 million. The project is managed on our behalf by the Institute of Municipal Finance Officers. With respect to training of industrial relations, training of municipal officials, we have 286 who would be members of the municipal local government bargaining council who are trained on this program, for which we've committed an amount of 1,408,000. And the balance are people in the sector, which would be training to deal with labor disputes in the workplace. On the construction contractor and road builder, for 346 million, we're using a construction speaker leadership. We're spending 3 million for that. And on this technical services, it's training 130 employees for a small municipality in the Northern Cape called Siangoma. We've given them 2.5 million, which is a 3-year project. On property valuation, this year we've allocated 50 bursaries. They are being managed for on our behalf by the Council for Assessing Property Value. And we have, in response, this figure was even a question raised in the National Assembly as to what it is that we are doing as a sector to respond to them. And those bursaries are with UNITA, 44 of the learners are with UNITA, and 6 of them are with the Pentec, where we're giving them 30,000 and the rest of the allocation will be going to intent, those that have qualified but do not have an experience. We had a project last year with the South African Council of Engineers. We've extended that project with a further 1.2 million for new entrants for the unemployed to the tune of 1.2 million. And because of the success that we achieved in the Community Development Worker Program, there was a huge request to respond to the balance of those learners that could not be trained, the CDW, that we've committed 13 million times. Chair, we have a problem, a serious problem, that municipalities generally, and you'll see as we go to the other financial plans, do not spend money on training. They pay levy to us, And we disperse back to them 50% of what they pay to us. So 20% goes to the National Skills Fund, 10% goes to our ministers, and 20% goes to the discretionary fund. So they get back 50% of whatever they pay to us. Example, Joburg pays us approximately 27 million, so they get 50% thereof. And then I should use K-Towns, as an appropriate example. We disperse back to K-Towns, what is the 27 million bucks, none of which has been spent on training. Despite our various interventions and undertaking by the mayor to ensure that, you know, that money was spent in training. And there are a number of reasons why K-Town did not use that money. But what we've been told a month ago is that that money has been put in the general revenue account. It has not gone back to training. Because the new CFO said it must go back. We still are making interventions, but also we have our own limitations in terms of the interventions we can make. So you see, therefore, that given that we have to entice municipalities and say we will make available an amount of 42 million rand, it's 650,000 rand per district, we've given it to the district, they've signed funding agreements with us, but the complying with the requirements to identify learners to indenture them to send us contracts. We have not made even a 1 cent disbursement against that money. So we've made available to 42 million that we've signed contracts, municipalities have not accepted the money. For us to be able to implement training in the sector, we are required to have workplace mentors in terms of the NCF requirement of the NCF. And for that we training 900 currently. At the cost of 2.7 million. It's a 5-day training, 3 to 5-day training program at the cost of 3,500 million. The same for moderator verifier. And we've also developed a quality management system which we are making available to training providers, because we also have a shortage of training providers in the sector to facilitate training. But some of them are not able to comply because they don't have the total system. You find that the guy has the relevant subject matter expertise. He knows everything about finance. He starts a company to train, but he doesn't have a quality management system to get his accreditation, or he does not have relevant policies. He does not even know how to get there. So we said, as a way of supporting the emerging providers in particular, not say your established providers who have the entire system, we need to develop that and make it available to your customers. So Chairperson, I'm not going to, all these are approaches that we've been doing. I think what is most important is this one of the impact assessment. Over the last 5 years, everybody has been spending money in one way, in one intervention or the other in the sector. Be it DPMG, be it EU funding, be it the CETA, be it National Treasury. But nobody has really gone back to measure what impact that training has made. Including the disbursements that we've made in training last year. Last year we disbursed an amount of 160 million rand to municipality in training, including prior year shortfall. Now, this committee would be asking, if local government sees that disbursed an amount of 160 million to municipality towards training, why is there a problem? I mean, anybody would ask that question. One of the reasons that money we know did not go when it was meant to go to, where the money has been spent, we're not so sure that it has been spent appropriately, where the training was relevant, where the gap, and so forth. So we started with the process of ensuring that we are able to measure that before we start spending money going forward. So Chairperson, I focus on this because I think that's the most important slide for this committee. All the other issues really are issues that we can just further elaborate on what we said. I just want to keep the slide separate with your permission. Okay. everything by keeping the slide, it does not preclude you from, because we speculated this student, from raising questions in or identifying the interest of chance. This is our SDN levy in income and grant dispersed, and this is an 8-month projection of levy income received and grant dispersed. I need also to say that because we receive our money via SARS, SARS receives the money, they have to verify that it's the correct allocation, and then 3 months down the line, it will go, 2 months down the line, it will go to Department of Labor, and if we are lucky, 3 months down the line, Department of Labor will then release the money to us. But we normally work on a 4-month sort of shortfall all the time. We work because of many hands in the money. But given the 80 and the 8-month projection, 80% net income by province for financial year 2006-07, this includes also the year-end projection. You'll see that our biggest levy contributor is KZN with 22 million. Housing 36 million, followed by KZN, followed by Western Cape, then Eastern Cape and Free State. This figure does not also include, we've discovered that there are a couple of municipalities who are not paying levy to us. The reason is that the money was in some instances, the money was incorrectly allocated to pay as you earn instead of FDA. This is not the levy. We have performed that they completed it as well. And 61.8% of our total levy income comes from the six metros. You know, the bulk of our 200 million income comes from the six metros. The levy grant disbursement against the income, also by province, you'll see that we are Shepparton entitled only to take 10% for our administration. And 20% of that money goes to the Minister of Labour, to the National Scheme Fund. So we never even see it unless we have strategic intervention. But you'll see that for the 8-month projection, the actual income that we've received has been 98.3, and that factors the 4 months with provision, and what we would have disbursed up to the end of March 2007 is 104 million and 55 back to the sector. Now the concern is, what is that 104 million doing in the sector if it's not addressing change? And of the discretionary, our projection is that as of end of March, we have disbursed 41,123,000. What we projected in penalties and interest is 810, and the total income would have been 166,729, and the reserve budget. So we'd be having about 97.8% of our budget. Like I said, Shepparton, these figures will give you details when we've done the final figure for the disbursement. You'll see also that the provinces that pay more, they tend to claim more in terms of the compliance with submission of WFT and implementation of those WFT, submission of the ATR. That information, also the completeness of that information, we will be able to give you that in August, because we only receive the annual training report at the end of June with the new workplace system. The responsible report says, for the last 12 months, this is what we have trained workers on, this was the course of training. This is what we require based on the CETA in terms of mandatory grant assessment, and this is our plan for next year. In terms of mandate, what is the best back by province services, which is best, including the, this is only the 8-month projection, including the 4-month projection to March this year, 20 million rand to Gauteng, 11.2 million to Western Cape, followed by Mpumalanga, which gets 2.567. Now this disbursement is based on actual training reports that we've received, because unless the minister is giving us ATR, we do not disburse the final payment. So you'll see the disbursement in some instances, Mpumalanga gets more than what Eastern Cape pays, so the level of compliance in Mpumalanga is higher than the Eastern Cape compliance in terms of implementing that sort of training. Chair, I'm going to leave it at that without boring you with a lot of detail. Okay.
Thank you very much, Dadem Pujong. Well, we appreciate the presentation. In fact, we have spoken to issues that are about change and spoken about the capacity. The only thing that you have to change is that this agreement was developed in the 23rd of March. And therefore, you must change that. What makes it less difficult? The only way of making it less difficult is that we must ensure that we go at length to check for this committee, which is the committee. Because you know what, the last thing that happens is not from the court. No, that's a senior house. The national attorney is a senior house. We are a senior house here. A house that is different from the national attorney in the sense that it put all tiers of committees under one roof. Nobody can do that. Now, the issue then that we would want to see more is that when you talk about your activities, they must be provincial specific. It means the report is different from the government. They don't look at our province. Our task is over provinces. We represent the interests of provinces and the cosmic policy. Meaning that even the students that we have and learners and so on, they must say, from KwaZulu-Natal, how many? From how every activity must have that plan, the provincial plan. In that way, we have complied to this policy in a way, in the ground. But you show that if you are there on a full time basis, you touch the runner, what one here. But let me allow my colleague, Mr. Lagoon, Mr. West, I could feel it. It's a great issue. Mr. West.
Thank you, Sheikh. The other day, Mr. Honourable Minister of Finance spoke to us and he wasn't really happy with the CETA's performances. Obviously, hopefully it's not the LG CETA, I'll just give you my TV, the LG, but local government CETA. But he said a lot of CETAs had invested money, weren't spending it on training, etc. And he also said something, he said, we must never believe overhead figures and so forth, we must be interrogating, never believe what the people show us on the street. But having said that, I'm just going back, you know, flying in the dark here because, hey, anything I've got to work, haven't got to put it to a general's report or anything. I've got this document which goes from the 1st of April annual report 2005 to the 31st of March 2006, which is nearly 2 years old. I mean, it's at least a year behind 2006 to 2007, financial year ended the 31st of March, with the April. So we're waiting for the new document. However, this is interesting, this one, because I never saw this one last year, on page 47. It says, in the event that the former number 22 contingency, in the event that the former CEO wins his case against the LGC, it is possible that LGC may suffer an estimated loss of $690,000. I'd just like to know if there's been any outcome on that, what's going on there. Then if you go to the one higher up, number 21, reconciliation of net cash flow from operating activities to net of deficit surplus. But on the right hand side, it's got the 2004-2005 restated debt. Then at the bottom, it shows a surplus of 35, if I take it 35,248,000. But if you look on the left hand column, starting at the year 2005-2006 in brackets, and it says a bracket is a deficit, you start off with a 52,669,000 deficit. I don't understand how you can end the year off on a surplus and begin the year on a deficit. But what I've hinted at tonight, if you go down to item number note 5, investment income, 16.348 deficit. How can you have a deficit on investment income? But okay. Then we go a little bit further, back to contingencies, item number 22, halfway through. It says, formal approval was received from National Treasury for the accumulation of surplus funds rolled over from the 2004-2005 financial year. Then, just below it says, a request for the accumulation of surplus funds has been submitted to National Treasury. But just the line above it says, approval was received. At the time of compiling the financial statements, no reply received from National Treasury to retain surplus funds. If you could just explain, maybe the one is just the right to roll over, and the other one is to accumulate, and the other one is to roll over. I don't understand that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Weir. Mr. Chair, if I look at the diagram, I like the colors. It's very beautiful. But the Bible says, those who got will get more. Those who got nothing will take more. That's what I see. Thank you.
Well, that gentleman has a student of professional.
Yeah.
So that doesn't mean you don't get.
Yeah.
But it's just doing for you to get more kids.
Yeah.
Still, I made the point that money policy sometimes don't use the money, but they resist that to change. And an example was the such money policy. I think one part of what I want to say in relation to that chapter, if you correct me, so you know, as we are sitting here, one of the things that we are very, very much that's one part. The second part, I am not sure, I'm not very familiar with the chief mentioned company, the renewal and the distribution of it. Is there a gap? Or is there a problem of mechanism to canalize the money? To those who are not using the money for the can indicate that you are the patient for this. That's one part, Chairperson. I just one, the second part, Chairperson, the second question that I want to raise. Well, you know, I agree that there's a lot of improvement. But one problem that is preparing us to talk to us is that talk to our service provider. Clearly, if you look at your service provider, has skills that you have access to, but they know the challenge. But also, if you look at your service provider, their property, or looking at the history case or system, you still don't have service provider. When you are confronted by a situation like this, you sometimes think of being corrected to carry the suit. And then you work with many colleagues to invite people and talk to them about the skills, challenges that you are confronted with. And ask them to mobilize the local communities of the province, just to mobilize people who are dealing with skills in those provinces to begin to organize themselves. It's very problematic, I know that. Just to check. I'm mentioning this because this is extremely important. It's important in the sense that, you see, these are opportunities for job creation. these are opportunities to eradicate and all of that. So I think as an effort to mobilize the potential that any survivor and any other people who have not been knowing about this, will have to pay attention and will therefore try to perform a similar strategic agenda of the government of the day. I'm not sure about those other questions that I wanted to ask. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. It's a very short, and I think I need to just add on. The municipalities that get back 50% of what they are trading, I'd like to know all of them. We're not spending that money on training. We can have, a list. And then unspent money, unclaimed money. I think you are putting this into a discretionary fund. Right? Then you are diverting, you say. You disperse from the discretionary fund. Just to exist the discretionary fund and give a province to mayors and in municipalities, you know. Is there any criteria or how do you disperse the money? Well, what discretion do you use? And the unspent money and unclaimed money by provinces or by municipalities, whenever they apply again, does it work on planning? Because if they don't use the money to be submitted, how they are going to use it if they don't claim it? If they don't claim it this year, or they're able to claim it the next year, or is it lost to them? Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Rodella.
Thank you, Jefferson. Chair, the day was long, and the mind can take us. And so these are the light ones we're going to be treated with our last one. Our last one, comes up with the day of the suffering. Maybe I'll have a little question, surprising. Yeah, the assistance in terms of giving our young chief learners powers, sure. If we can get the criteria is used in identifying the youth. I know that looking at this mama, which I look at a higher relation. Because sometimes you face the situation where some of these kids will approach you. So you know some of our friends have been trained somewhere like this. But how can we express this kind of... So if they can just assist us so that they were able to give our kids the right information. I don't know if I'm checking, but I think they don't say what I'm saying. Then they get no comment. Now, the 3W, training thereof and work committee. Yeah, I noticed the kind of training that some of them are getting in my area. I don't know how are they monitoring the kind of training that is given to some of them are very effective. Because it's something of not of their making, the kind of some of the work cuts that we're having and what committees are having in some areas. They know, say, that there are people who have reached the ceiling. They reach the ceiling are not trainable. And unfortunately, some people find themselves in being or committee members. You remember what was said by
they mentioned how those telephones are being delivered. They said, unfortunately, some of the CPFs in some area are led by the Russian criminals. They were protecting their terrain. Now, here are these work committees, some of them in Israel. We take them to this Porsche hotel for training. They come back with nice, decorated documents. We call a meeting to say, this member was from training for the whole week. And you tell us about the training. I don't want you to watch it. I don't know. Please come to our rescue because it's very embarrassing. When you go to this meeting, it's time to be able to rescue these people. You rescue them by trying to explain some of the things. And this person was supposed to be the one who must take on this this subject. But I just don't know. What can we do? And I don't know what can we do about this issue. Are there any calculated outputs after the training that was in the system? Calculated outputs that we can put on top of the mountain, as a chair on top to say, we have done this. These are the tiny examples that we can give to say, these are outputs that were excel in training some of the students. As I said, chairperson, this is my only story question.
Thank you very much, Omar. Well, you know, when parents now they look after kids. As parents grow old, they no longer become sick. They become very weak and allow things to happen in front of their eyes. You find that those that came when they were still young, they were very interested. Now, I think in your case, those that met you in the morning found you very energetic and engaging. Now, they are good companies. The comment is important before I come to the issue of the question. To me, I think I see what you have as priority areas in relation to interventions around capacity building. But I think project management is a key. Project management. In anything that the country doesn't have, right? That's why you find a project around service delivery are not moving accordingly. Because that is not available in our country. And when available, it's very minimal. Now, I think to me, it's supposed to be among the critical areas that you focus upon in relation to the work that we do. So that people, there are people who are able to coordinate all the services and ensure that work is done. Both an engineer focus on engineering, and those focus on this, contract on that and that, but you need a person who is able to build a team and ensure that people are working accomplishing and they deliver things. I mean, let's take 2010. Not 2010 is run as a project, in a project management way. And you're into your timeline, you're into your areas where you say, no, you are reaching your targets here and so on and so on. So I think if the country can do that, we'll be fine. In everything that we do it in a project management way. In that way, it becomes part of our lives. It is not being an action. I think that the major area that we are supposed to focus upon in relation to the intervention. But generally, I think the areas or the skills, the areas where you focus upon is good. What to me, I think your documents are supposed to be saying that I get a backlog or still shortage has been done in all these policies. Now you are supposed to say, we are training people X number because the backlog exists all the time when you are using it. So that whatever you do shows that you are moving in a proper direction and you have the correct information. Now, if you present your committee, you find that we are not even seen the backlog, therefore it becomes difficult to share. But if you are able to show that, you are able to see that now, the forward movement in terms of what has to happen. Now, one of the things that you've raised, which to me I think also has a weakness on your area of focus. I'm speaking here with lots of experience, maybe not at the level of Mr. Hill, on local government. Human resources, plan. You know, you need people to do human resources. Human resources integrated into. You talk about police organization, it's human resources that develops that. You talk about placement of people, training of people, and everything else. And you find that in municipalities, human resource capacity is minimal. Most of the time it's outsourced. If it is there, it's chaotic. That's why you find that municipal managers are suspended, social services managers are suspended, your field councils don't know you. And they don't have strong human resource managers who tell them that no, you can't do A, B, C, and D in terms of the very thing to run the job. It means simple amount of money for a man. They want to use it. But it's a fool for green value. They want to push. Then I'm saying, to me, I think that area is an area that requires a lot because it is a discipline that integrates and coordinates the main discipline in relation to what has happened. Sometimes it's taken that it's not that important. Now, placement of people, there are people who are graduating from university. What is the level of placement in terms of internships and graduates? In the university. You know, when the Eastern Cape, about 3 years ago, we found there human resource practitioners, internal auditors, right? People who were, I think it was doing a final year, who were saying, no, we're ready to be deployed. Deployed, come. Now, you talk to them, the municipalities, you find that these people, they tell you about the bureaucratic answer. No, we're released, and so on, and all that, and that. You see, these people are not disaffected, they show that they know what to have mind. And these internal auditors, it can go a long way in ensuring that these disclaimers are minimized in relation to the financing. No, people can come, they go and buy something, they can't produce a receipt. So the receipt. They can't even write financial statements of how, what they've paid down and so on. Which seems to be in the olden times, only when you knew. We know that there are two things in finance. It's income and expenses. Two things. The other thing is just a sophistication of the two things. Income and expenses. And you must show where there is the source of income. And you must show where you spend the money. Therefore, you must have a fee on every item. Simple. But in fact, you start with this thing, people cannot afford money that they do. Now I'm saying then, can you confidently tell me that I can go and tell those youth that I met in the same case, that I met with Sadam Kupi today. The date is the 8th of May. That was the place in Kofaro City and other municipalities there. It's ensuring that this problem is addressed and people can develop this experiential learning. I'm speaking the language now of practical now. Now, I'm saying this as a problem. To me, I think that can address a lot of things. But in the main, what you are doing is a commendable work. I mean, yes, this teacher is, all of us know, it was amongst the weakest teachers in our country. And I think it needs to be, I mean, what you are doing a good job. However, I think as we spoke to other to the committee on PRL, we need to have a meeting with the parents. Still, I'm talking just to Europe, my mind, let me have a date engagement. I'm telling you, this member will come with one of the ideas on how to take this thing forward. So that they are seen to be true partners. You know, they're able to co-own this program and help others in that. We don't do the little thing, we are not harsh, you know, we are really soft. Nice, good people.
Yeah.
To you. Because of you're not anyone. They're one.
Perhaps it's correct. Maybe I should start with your comment. We had a chat at the office before we came here. I mean, the question that we asked ourselves, we said, is the presentation that we're going to make today going to add value to you and all to us? And I must just apologize, you know, in terms of the information that we give you.
And our share answer was no. I'm sharing the reason why. We wanted a platform where we can have a robust engagement. Because it is quite, every time we make presentations, we realize that we're moving from different points of view. And what we did, and Mr. Jack here can tell you, we said to the portfolio committee, I think last year we met four times to the portfolio committee. We said we needed to have a workshop, just a one day or half a day workshop, with the portfolio committee. Firstly, to understand the mandate of the CITA. Because the CITA cannot be the panacea of all local government problems. There are certain attempts to question that trading by itself will solve good and wrong problems. It cannot. Other issues are issues of institutional capacity. Training is one of those issues that can respond to challenges. And therefore, there is also this expectation that the CITA must do something, you know, to deal with, and that something has not been defined. The third element is, what legislative authority does the CITA have? Nothing. The fourth issue was issues of malicious compliance by municipalities. If municipalities submit documents, and those documents are not taken by municipalities for purposes of training grants, and when they use those grants for training or whatever, what can we do? Absolutely nothing. So what we then said, we saw that from that point of view, it is able to inform members of the legislature, NCOP or National Assembly, to, you know, say how, in which areas we need to strengthen this institution or this public entity to be able to undertake some of the challenges. And from that point, I agree with the chair that it would be helpful because we'll be moving from the common text, we'll be seeing from the same handbook. However, what you've raised here, you know, are excellent questions. Because I don't know if it's a long-winded response. Great to say, Shepherd, if I start with the areas that you've raised. The priority areas we have highlighted, for instance, the international situation training to the tune of 7 million, the issue of justice. And you are very correct. You will see when we do that workshop, anything to be coordinated maybe with Mali, that municipalities are not focusing on HR and HRD measures at all. They are focusing more on IR issues, dispute resolution, discipline. If we go and we can give you the statistics, the number of people that are suspended in municipalities, some of them are suspended for head up. And only remember to convene a hearing when the press picks it up or, you know, the opposition, depending on the municipality. So those are areas of business. But we even said, in that area of industrial relations, we need to make an intervention because then, you know, those methods are not appropriate here. Issues of conciliation, of arbitration, management of dismissals, issues of conciliation. So that training program is geared at dealing with those issues because those are hot potato issues. This could happen every day in the workplace, but there is no mechanism of key to deal with those. Now, issues of HRD,
human resources development, it's issues of field audit, it's issues of capacity, it's issues of training and development. Those are issues that we have to contend with on a daily basis. Issues of not having an appropriate skills development facility, but a person designated to champion the cause of skills development in the workplace is not necessarily the correct person. The junior official who's often not taken seriously, the workplace skills plan is not linked to the municipality's IDG or the Office of Safety. So those areas we contend with, we realize that are areas of weakness. Chairperson, the area of project management, you realize in the presentation we did highlight it to say that it's an absolute area of need. In 2004-2005, we spent money to train people in project management and contract management. I think the disjuncture is with in terms of our discretionary grant allocation, what we do is that where we will be spending discretionary funds, it is in those five key areas. But it does not mean that municipalities must not spend money in those areas that we've highlighted. Let me just explain. And I also tell you our problems, by the way, not doing everything right, which also have our own challenges, which is something that we need to bring to our attention. We have an SFP document. We do a research. Out of that research, we come up with a document called sector field plan. We circulate that to our municipalities through the designated skills development facilitator. Now, depending at the level of the SDF, whether the SDF is there, if it's not a member of the senior management, it means senior management never gets to understand what are the key change drivers in the sector, what are the key areas where training must happen in the sector. So that SSP becomes a document that ends up with a junior officer. What is ideally supposed to happen is that when a municipality compiles its workplace skills plan, that we use the sector skills plan, by the way, to check if indeed the municipality is training according to the sectoral priorities. Are they training people in the areas that we've identified, the areas that we've raised, where we've, out of our research, validated the fact that there are skills shortages. And this is where we find issues of malicious compliance. And FDS fits in this little corner. He compiles the document called Workplace Skills Plan. He submits it to the CETA because the CETA wants it by the 30th of June so that he has met the deadline. But that document is not a product of consultation. It's not in the IDP. It's not addressing the skills priorities of a municipality linked to the business objective. Not at all. What do we do as a CETA? Once the municipality has done that, we are obliged by law to defend, whether it's quality or not. Now, we have a weakness also in the system that we did not have the requisite capacity, in all the provinces to go back and allocate each workplace skills plan. We had a manager and say, look, we accept, you've met the deadline, but this WSP is not up to spec. It's not of a quality that we have. And the study can also give specific examples in the Western Cape. Not so bad, not so much worse in the Western Cape, but worse in other provinces. So what do we do as a CETA? Absolutely nothing. If you check, there are two cases where services CETA and their CETA were taken to court by employers who said, we've complied, we've submitted by the duty, we've given you the document, we've paid our lazy, we want our dispensers back. They took the CETA to court and they won the case. So in that way, our hands are tied, we can't do anything. But we need to bring this to attention to say we have a system that really is so open-ended that anybody who's clever can manipulate it. We have a system which does not compel employers, like the employment equity, which is not enforceable, to comply, to train people, to train people for their own objectives. Employers said we pay levies, the system must produce the skills. There is no debate that's going on. It's malicious compliance. What is it that we've done, Chairperson? We've decided to go to provinces and have provincial summits. We've had provincial summits for Limpopo, for Mpumalanga, for Northwest, for Gauteng. But we've brought on board the relevant Department of Local Government or Local Government and Housing, depending. And out of that, with all the expenses and all the mayors and the speakers, and out of that process, we came out with a provincial peace summit. And those conferences, Chairperson, were able to give the NEC and the municipalities the state of affairs as we know it in all the municipalities. And that information, as the requested, Chairperson, will make it available to you. And we emerged out of that 2 days with a declaration. We will also make available those copies of the declarations where we signed the NEC that Twitter understands the issues, the no problem. In terms of my authority to intervene in the act, this is how we want to work with the speaker to get there. We've tried to work collaboratively. And as I indicated, we've signed MOUs and with those provinces. And as a way of having a coordinated intervention. We've escalated that to DPLG. We said to DPLG, look at Section 68 of the Systems Act, which says, over and above what municipalities are paying to the city, they must provide for 1% for training, because they realize that they can only get 50% of the 1% they pay to the city. That, in itself, is not sufficient. But what happens if municipalities don't comply? So through our MOU with UCLG on this issue and other issues, we said, we don't have the power to intervene. But we think from a legislative point of view, from oversight function, there are certain things you can do to influence legislation to run it. And we will run it is our mandate to do those things. So it's not that we're folding our heads and say we're sitting lame ducks here. We try to be as innovative as we possibly can. The question of can we speak with people to say we know the state of affairs to some degree in each municipality, and to some degree we can say we know given the product that we receive. But DPRG and ourselves have had a long discussion on this given the cabinet decision of Mr. Dex last year, where we decided to embark on a detailed skills audit. That we want, as we sit here, we can tell you that the state of skills or competences or expertise required for municipalities to perform certain functions in Cape Town is X, Y, Z. We should be able to tell that. And that's the research that the TNT is doing, which we are funding. It's a 2-year project, an 18-month project, 20 million rand, of which 8 million rand is being released this year for the process. I don't know how far Mr. Jack can talk to that if you want more information. So we are also trying to say we must have adequate empirical evidence for us to make such an informed intervention. It cannot be the rule of thumb all the time if we are to make a difference. We can also share information that we shared with the demarcation board about the municipalities that have performed badly for the last 5 years of assessment, seven, where there's absolute no improvement, and what interventions are we planning. You should also maybe be able to access to that information. So, Chair, I'm saying, problems of local government, myself having been a practitioner, but as you see, the chairperson knows, and I said, you are better. That if you can sit and talk about them, you can try the enormity of the problem. But I think we need to pick on things that can assist us to turn them in. There's so much to be done, but we cannot do everything. So we need to pick on what are those key issues that we want to pick on. And as a result, we will be having a national skills curriculum, the 28th and the 29th. Where we have both the Minister of Public Administration, the Deputy Minister of Local Government, Mr. Mahangani, people from JITSA, Mr. Mandash, the Sector of Affairs, where we want to emerge, and all the MCs, we want to emerge with a common framework to say what are the areas where we need to come up with a national declaration to say, as the sector, the FISA, the provinces, the departments. We agree that this is a common agenda. I mean, we do have a queue with the CGNG 5-year strategic agenda, but in terms of skills intervention, what are those areas? National treasure is part of our process. We're trying to avoid the shoot and miss approach. What are those areas where we need to strengthen local government capacity. As either advocating these government institutions or government departments to support local government. So that's the approach that we should be sharing. Yeah, let me just stop at that. I'm coming to the other question. I think the chair's questions were a bit loaded. The give and get. Northern Cape, for instance, Sianoma, let me take the smallest municipality, Sianoma, pays us in levies in total, I think 80,000 pounds a year, of which they can get 40,000 pounds a year. That's all that we get from Sianoma. I'm talking under property, but it's less than 100,000. But what we've given to Sianoma is 2.5 million. Because that municipality has absolutely no technical skills. And around, you know, basic services development, the training intervention. So it's not you give more, you get more. We're using that money that is unspent, unclaimed, that goes to special funds to fund those municipalities that are like, provided of course they meet our criteria. The central government's criteria is on those five areas. So that we speak that. So if anybody, any of the municipalities submit an application on the five key priority areas, that's the criteria they have to meet, then we will give an allocation. There are other ad hoc projects that we'll look at, for the project management, or any strategic intervention like defense, we will say the minister wants this management and leadership program, can we make an intervention? So those are ad hoc projects, or this work committee stuff. It's ad hoc, but key to our support in the special fund is in areas where we can make a difference. And the mode of delivery is different. It's not being getting everybody into a classroom, but it's to do the mighty to mentoring, coaching as one aspect. The RPA or other modes of delivery. The issue of legislation, Chair, I think I have alluded to that. That is, unfortunately, as teachers, we don't have any statutory authority to intervene. Even when we disapprove and decline and approve, we get the challenge. And our view is that we are there to support the sector, not to be engaged in legal disputes, because we don't want to hoard money. No, we are not a bank. We have to send the money back to the sector for important purposes. However, if it's not spent there, what should we do? For instance, as in Cape Town, the 27 million have gone back into the general as a new fund. We can make noise about it, certainly, but we have no legislative authority to intervene. Chair, the question of training provider capacity, it remains a big challenge. You know what is a challenge? The challenge is our own legislation. And the legislation is getting more and more onerous. Next year we'll be giving, we don't want to come here and give you another excuse. For anybody to provide training in the sector, that training must be linked to standards and qualifications. And Mr. Jake can tell me, he's got a special excuse with their academy, even with very harsh with. If the CETA other mandate is in terms of that, so we are an each vehicle. Anybody who provides any program, it must be linked to a qualification, registered on a letter of qualification framework, or it must offer a program that leads to a qualification registered on the national qualification framework. And therefore, the requirements to comply are very onerous. They must have a quality management system. They must, of course, be legally compliant, registered with CIPRO, have a tech clearance certificate, have competent assessors, moderators, and verifiers. They must have ETD practitioners. They must have learning material. They must have assessment tools. They must have the relevant policies. That is onerous for, you know, even for a person who knows that I know I can teach people science. But you can teach people, yes, but you cannot give them the fact that they're confident. So it becomes a problem. That's why
many imaging providers don't image because of the quality. And our intervention is to say we will develop a quality management system, for instance. We will make the learning material available to the service providers. Where we can measure the expertise, the subject matter expertise, we assist those people to get there, and then they can deliver the training at no cost. It's a way of facilitating learning in those areas. But there will be new areas, for instance, infrastructure asset management. We started with the Greenfield qualification. There's never been an infrastructure asset management qualification in the country, which is a first for us. Training on municipal finance management, equities of supply chains, areas which are very new areas and the expertise is not there. The internal the property valuation now, in terms of the requirement of the Act and what we're trying to put in place with the South African Council of Property Development, is a qualification that's not linked currently to MTF. We're still using the UNISA and the other training programs to work towards an MTF-based qualification. Even higher education, there are areas where they struggle if it's a greenfield area. So these are challenges that unfortunately we have to contend with. Our view, Chairperson, is that we said maybe we need to take 4 steps backwards and say, yes, the ultimate goal is to qualify everybody else. But given the challenges now, why don't we go mentally basis? Why don't we get people to be able to do the task and progressively work towards getting them to be qualified? The same debate that is emerging within the technical working group and the KISA group around issues of artisan training, for instance, the whole apprenticeship system. In terms of the Skills Development Act, only the regulations that pertain to Manpower Training Act on apprenticeship are still relevant. But the whole intention was that the Minister of Labour will repeal those once the learnership system is fully running. And the learnership system is linked to an MTF and it has its own problem and it's not likely to be fully functional because of its onerous requirements in the next 5 years. That's my view. And hence the correct decision to say, let's take 4 steps backwards and look at apprenticeship training. What was wrong with artisan training? But then there are other issues that are major which I don't want to go with. But I think maybe it's correct, and as a country we wanted to run ahead of ourselves. We put policies, systems on our page. But I think our capacity to get there, you know, we never question it. It's something that we need to realistically review and say, maybe we need to take 1 or 2 steps forward in order to take the steps. Okay. Chair, I would just like to look at the question of the intent that you spoke about. Can you, with certainty, say tomorrow to those internal auditors, the guys who qualified, those who want internship, can you certainly say, yes, the LGC will do something, absolutely. Without a shadow of doubt, Chair, we give you that. You should give us all those details. You should tell us where they are and give them to us. You have 300% assurance from us that we will place it. We do have internship plans, we do have absolutely. So that one, undoubtedly, we prepare to put our hands on the block for that. The question that was raised, Chair, and I want to come to the technical question, I'll come to that. On the last year financial report, the contingent liability. At the end of the, in terms of the PFMA, we are required at the end of the financial year, if there's any contingent liability, to raise the provision. Whether, if somebody issues, start a legal process to say, I want to sue you, whether that lawsuit is real or perceived. And, you know, because they say the law is an act. A person wins on technicality, not on the truth. So, we have to raise that contingent liability. And what has come out of that, we have removed that in this financial year, because nothing has come out of that. And we're very confident from the legal advice that we got that the incumbent would not win the case, and he has since not pursued the matter. So there is no issue there on that one. So it never came to bear. The matter was removed from the board.
On the second issue, the restated finance, point two, that the 35 million restated and the 52 million deficit. Unfortunately, the way the SICA works, all the SICA, there's a problem now with the auditor general, without exception, that's how we begin. The issue of completeness of revenue is a problem because, one, at times we get more income than is due to us, simply because staff could have made an allocation wrongly, they could have allocated pay as you earn to SDS, and we get more income than we can reach, or they can transmit lesser than what is due to us. But the second issue that causes this problem, at the end of the financial year, we always reflect the deficit because we're working on a 4-month backlog. So at the end of the financial year, there's income that's not accounted for 4 months. And we would then project what would be disbursement for the previous financial year, maybe a month later. So it will cost those. But this is a matter that the auditor general is quite aware of. Without really getting to the technicalities, but some of the technical questions I'll come back to you. I'm not an accountant, and I'm a financial manager, so more of the accounting issues I can come back to you. But safe to say, those are the reasons really, that we always end up with a deficit, and we readjust into the new year. And that's why every year when we start, we have to restate what would be the actual for that financial aid given the income that we've received. The question about formal approval and a request for accumulation of funds. I think this was just restating that in the 2004-05, an approval was given, but at the time we reported on this one, there was no for the surplus funds, there was no approval yet received. So you see that formal approval was in respect to 2004-05, and the request was with respect to the financial year under review, which was 2005. And at that time, there was no CACC from the central treasury, whether they are clean or not. So in the new annual report, we will say formal approval was granted or not, and if we have other surplus funds, will simply say that we requested permission. I think that answers those two questions. The question number five was about the list of unspent or unchanged money by province. We will provide that. In the 2005-06, we had Nelson Mandela, one of the metros that did not comply with the forfeited 9 million. In this financial year, we have just quite a big one. SMB metro, this financial year under review, they forfeited approximately also 8.7 million. But we can give you the list by province. We'll make that point up. The criteria to access that, I think I did say that it's in terms of the discretionary grant criteria. So the last question is from Honorable Member Mukwege. The information that we're giving on bursaries, how can it be easily accessible to municipalities? I just omitted to indicate that out of the 42 million that we made available to municipalities, we said 50% of that money, which is 695 per district, must go towards section 18.2 lenders, the unemployed lenders. That each district must identify those lenders in the 5 respective areas. To engender them into program, we give those lenders 22,500 per lender for a 1-year program. 10,000 which go towards the cost of the training provider and assessment, and then 12,500 to be the stipend to the lenders. And that's in that area where we're not getting joined. We thought that by going to the district rather than going to the individual municipalities, it would be much more coordinated. In fact, Chair,
I had a discussion last week with the chairperson of SANGA, Mayor Masoli, about his own municipality, where we've made this money available. He said, we've made this money available in October. We've received a funding agreement from Joburg, and there hasn't been movement. What is the issue? You know, but we at times have to go right to the top, and then also the excuses which is going to happen. So the mayor also has been incapacitated chairperson that we need more of this interaction and at SANGA, which we made at the national conference, giving the information that we have the step by province, by municipality, issues of compliance and non-compliance. As I'm there, I'm very sure that we know that we do have the information that we have just given it to you. To respond to this, to say, it's not about money. See, that's the problem. Money is not a problem, maybe let's say in our sector, including the municipalities themselves. This perception that municipalities are poor, shared, is not true. Municipalities are not spending the money in the correct areas. I mean, you see that they're spending only 35% of 55% of their budget on the other issue that we found here in the area of scarce skills is that once we're talking about scarce skills in municipalities, we find that there's a mismatch of the one. People are not placed in jobs where they are suitably qualified for. This is a mismatch because either we don't want to retrench people or because of whatever reason. If our diaspora goes very good. But there's a mismatch. Two, we find that there are no norms and standards in municipalities for benchmarking the level of service delivery. We can tell you with certainty that in the rural areas, in the smaller municipalities, the proportion of the number of households to a municipal employee is one municipal employee to 1,900 households. There are no norms and standards in terms of employment, which is a matter that also we're taking up with CPLG in terms of coming up with a framework to say what is an acceptable level of employment. Because this 30% to 35% of national salary on salary may also be an impediment. It does not take into account, you know, realistic factors to say if the municipality is to render an effective service, for each number of households for a particular service you need to equate to a certain number of employees. So there aren't those areas. We may talk about skills even now. Let's say we marshal everyone to a specific direction and give them the skills, but there will still be inadequate in terms of numbers. So the fact that there are myriad of factors that also affect service delivery. It's not only issues of training and development. The last one, Chair, is around the question of quality of training. Can we attest to that? The answer is no, we cannot attest to that. And hence we're going back to the impact assessment to check for value for money, to check for relevance, to check for gaps in the training, to check for appropriateness, and we say what do we do, or what interventions. We always want to move from an informed basis rather than a rule of thumb. So maybe next year we'll come back and change and say, in these areas we're doing well, in these areas, on the city interview, Chair, I don't know what to say. Safe to say, one, we respond to this with mixed emotion. One is that we can tell with certainty that they are making an impact. They are still struggling somewhere with maybe other areas, report writing and other areas. But the other mixed emotion is that in the early stages, there was a contestation of tests with councillors because of the municipal election, but those things have died down. But from all the feedback that we've had from everybody else, generally they said the program is good, the quality of the program, and we are very proud because that program was a product of the CETA intervention. We did not engage external capacity expertise to write the programs. I was responsible for writing the qualification from scratch and with the assistance of UNIF and others developing the material. So that's why I'm speaking with mixed emotions to say, yes, I like it, but I think overall it is a generally good program. And hence, Chair, what we've done, we've
taken the good in the CDW program and we embedded it in the work committee program because of the linkages and similarities working with communities. Particularly on issues of advocacy, of mobilization, and of lead identification and so forth. Yeah, Shepherd, that's all. I'm sorry to be long with this, but the questions were not yet.
No, no, thank you very much. What is quite impressive is honesty and openness. You know, because once you do that, you allow people to say, no, let's come and help. Let's come and work together. That's a different thing. And in that way, it's just a great deal. But everything of the silver there is really. Remember, you know how you talk.
Thank you, Chair. All that I can say is to confirm some of the initiatives that we are currently engaging with the sector, especially the leadership and management training of councillors and senior managers. Also, the skills audit that we are currently engaging, comprehensive skills audit program, as you indicated earlier on, that in order for the committee to be able to assess progress, we need to know where we are. That has been lacking, hence the identified need for a comprehensive skills audit. We are undertaking that, but it is undertaken in phases, that is a number of smaller, about 10 municipalities, but building up, as Mr. Mfokeng indicated, over an 18-month period, we'll be able to have a complete picture of the gaps, skills gaps, and so that we can be able to respond. But in the meantime, there are various initiatives. Our DG indicated yesterday that the leadership training program for councillors is one of those identified. It's not just for councillors, it's also for senior managers on leadership skills. And as again, Mr. Fogel indicated, it's a comprehensive qualification-based program that is registered with SAQA and is accredited. We go through a process of accreditation because the city has an authority that authorizes and accredits programs so that these are programs in terms of quality assurance to indicate that these are necessary and they meet the requirements as indicated. So, from that point of view, I just to confirm that indeed there are collaborations that are working well between the cities.
Thank you very much. Well, I think there's an argument that we must meet on a day or half a day. Whereas we come, we're going to raise on issues that are of a challenge. It means that we're wearing pursuits and t-shirts. No commodity. Because once it got openly and honestly, the intention is to find solutions to the challenges that are there. Quality. Including the debate that we are making, that means we have a beautiful constitution and the laws, which are far beyond than the development of our society. Where it is. It's more European-based constitution and the laws. Then we find that there's a gap in terms of the values that you want to acquire where you are. Now, that is applicable generally. We're speaking in issues of persons in the country. The rights of an accused and so on, and everything else. We find that these things are a result of what we acquire today. I think this thing of going back and taking a step back and moving forward is something that we have to look at. We're going in the wrong way. Now, you must be said, there's nothing wrong with it. It's a nice picture. But I'm saying that I think that must be discussed with honesty and so on, and try to find solutions.
and also the issue of mentorship. Monkeys doing monkey do. I like that. Monkeys doing monkey do. I'm instructed by all I'm saying here. He says that I don't think. Germany, it is good that we must look at the criteria to say, come and make the human resource practitioner, developer, the manager. Our people of human resource, they can assist you to get the question at the table. But those are people really who ensure that the rules of organization are changing in order to move forward. That we must look at bringing those people to the organization. But this is some technical aspect of it. Having said that, vendors and everything set up in Oshinawa. Just a package of paper.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think in the process of us being briefed on the budgets of departments and on the activities of departments and the institutions that are tasked or that are supporting government in trying to achieve what it sets itself to achieve, we also learn to respond to issues that are raised by those that we claim to represent or those that have elected us to represent them. The information we get is quite worthwhile for us, and we are committed to making sure that the support you require to the extent that we can, we do give you that support. The cooperation that seems to be coming out is appreciated, and I think we will move from strength to strength in order to achieve those goals that we set ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Romanyose. Well, Baba Umfukeno, how is that? What are you telling? Something come around. Because the bone will know the master continues, and the bone will know why Raka Gabay.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Gracias.
Are you going to use that gas?
I hope so, because
I'm going to find out from them.
Let me just take it now.